Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Warped Reality Paranormal Podcast bonus episode. On this episode, John Reich continues his research on Bigfoot and some significant evidence involving the big guy. If you haven't listened to the previous episode, the Natman and I had a great conversation with the Squatch father himself, Al Santariga, who details his experience where he was within 7 feet of a Bigfoot. So I encourage you to check that out. And if you've had a Bigfoot sighting or any cryptid, ghost, UFO, or alien sighting, please leave us some voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you could email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You could do so anonymously. There's no judgment here. And if you'd like, if it's real to you, it's real to me. All right. So let's get on with the Right Headspace with John Wright.
Good evening. You are entering a dimension where up is down, good is evil, and day is night. You've just made a wrong turn into the Right Headspace.
Thanks, Joe. Welcome back, everybody. I know it's been a little while since I put out a segment. It's been real hectic. I've been doing tours at the museum. I just started up track, so first week or so of track usually is kind of hectic. But I'm back. It's a dreary Friday snow day morning. I guess I should be happy I got the day off. So I got a little bit of time on my hands, and I'm going to jump into today's segment. Today's segment is going to focus on what I think might be the most compelling evidence in the quest to prove the existence of Sasquatch. I'm also going to highlight the work of notable scientists like Dr. Grover Krantz and Dr. Jeff Meldrum. If you're familiar with those names, you might be able to guess what today's segment is all about. So I'll pause for a second, let you think. If you said footprints, then you are correct. Now, we start with what are the origins of the footprints? So the modern Bigfoot phenomenon began in the mid-20th century, somewhere around 1958, with the discovery of large prints found in no other place other than Bluff Creek, California. And these were discovered by a bulldozer operator named Jerry Crew. Crew had made several plaster casts of the footprints, each measured over 16 inches in length. A short time after the discovery, a gentleman by the name of Ray Wallace admitted to hoaxing the prints. Wallace claimed that he made the prints with carved wooden feet that he had attached to his boots with straps. The problem with Wallace's claim is the static nature of the print, that all the prints were identical and there was a lack of detail when compared to those found by Crew and found by others since that time. I'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later on in this segment. Next thing I want to mention is like characteristics of footprints. Big footprints are described as larger than those of a human, which sometimes can be debated. And I'll give you a prime example. I'm doing a tour the other day. We're in the Bigfoot exhibit. One of the gentlemen on the tour was 6'9". This dude was a giant. And just out of curiosity, we actually have a couple plaster prints that are casts that are up on the wall. And I said to the gentleman, I said, what size shoe do you wear? And he said, I'll do you one better. Takes his shoe off, holds it up next to the print. And his shoe was almost the exact size of the print that we have hanging in the shadow box on the wall. And that print is about 15 and a half inches long. So that brings me to some of the different characteristics. So we have the length of the print. You have often five toes, which are featured. And most occasions, you're going to have an arch of some type. The size and the depth of the prints suggests that whatever is making the prints has to be a pretty heavy creature. Now, as far as characteristics, we got the size or the length of them, which is going to average anywhere from about 15 to 24 inches. The width. Width is going to vary from about 6 to 10 inches. And one of the things that I can tell you was very different between the guest on the tour and the plaster cast that we have is this gentleman's foot was only about half of the width of the casts that we have. So it was the same length, but wasn't even close to the width of the cast that we had. The other thing that we look at is the toe structure. Toes are typically going to have five toes, although there are some prints that have shown four toes, and there are other prints that have shown some type of deformity. One of the better known ones is one that's referred to as cripple foot. And the other thing that you're going to see is varying toe shape and size. The fourth characteristic is depth. Prints have been shown to be somewhere from 1 to 1.5 inches in depth. Also, this can be kind of influenced by the soil itself, the composition. Is it a rocky soil? Those types of things. So that can have a bearing on how deep the prints go. But most people are going to tell you that the compression that is exerted is going to be somewhere around 1 to 1.5 inches deep, whereas most humans don't necessarily do that. Now, as far as, and I'm willing to admit, yes, there are hoaxes out there. I'm also willing to admit that people are going to make mistakes, that sometimes you're going to have misidentifications. So where somebody might see a big footprint, it could potentially be maybe just a large bear double print where the back foot has landed just in front of where the forepaw had landed. And now we have this extended print, and the back foot of a bear typically has almost kind of like a toe shape to it that's very similar to humans. As far as analysis is concerned, once you make the cast, and one of the new things, and you can see it on some of the new shows, some of the technology is phenomenal. They have these little portable LiDAR scans that they can use to do virtual prints, which it's freaking awesome. If you got the money to do that stuff, God bless, go for it. But if you're one of the other people that doesn't have that kind of money or the accessibility, well, you're forced to go with the old school method, which is plaster casts. But once we have the casts, you can do a number of different things. First is measurements. We can compare the length and width to other known species. By using the prints, the spread of the prints, you can figure out stride pattern. The length of the stride can give you some sort of idea as to the relative height and potentially the gait of the maker of those prints. The other thing that gets mentioned sometimes is what they refer to as wear patterns. One of the things that they mentioned, and I saw this with Dr. Meldrum's book, is there were unique characteristics that they were able to find with some of these different prints. Like as they were going through and over the course of a lifetime of walking over rocky soil and things like that, you could see that there were kind of like wear patterns on the sole of the foot. And I kind of liken it to, I've been to Cape Cod, I've gone on whale watches several times. And what's really awesome is when you go on these whale watches, they have these marine biologists that are familiar with the whales. And what they'll do is hold up a chart, and that chart is actually going to have the fluke or the tail of the whale. And what they're able to do is identify the whale based upon the color pattern of the fluke. And every single whale is unique. They're not the same. So when you look at the wear patterns, these wear patterns, or maybe some of the other things that I mentioned earlier, as far as possible deformities, lack of a toe, these can all be things that can be used to identify particular individuals. And I know in some cases they've actually found footprints of certain individuals in other areas. So that would have to, if that was going to be hoaxed, then that's somebody who is definitely motivated to try and hoax things. There are a few key figures in, when it comes to print analysis. Both mentioned that the intro, Dr. Grover Krantz was an anthropologist from Washington State University. He was one of the first academics to take the Bigfoot topic seriously. In the 1970s, he published several papers which supported the existence of Bigfoot. He argued that the creature could be a distant relative of what is called Gigantopithecus. Gigantopithecus is a large ape, a very, very large ape. If you pause this, you can go online, you can look up Dr. Krantz, you can look up the model that he created based upon the idea of Gigantopithecus, and if the guesses are correct, and again, it's educated guesses, this thing would have stood somewhere around 8, maybe potentially 9 feet tall. As far as Gigantopithecus, why did he enter this into it? Because it is a giant ape, and it is part of, well, we are part of the primate tree. Anyway, it's a large ape. It died off a couple million years ago. So it's what they refer to as a relict hominoid. Is this something that could have been like a leftover from that time frame? Dr. Krantz focused on the anatomical features of the prints, such as the toes, the arch. He believed that the prints showed signs of bipedalism. He also believed that the jawbone of the Gigantopithecus, because of the way that it was shaped, it would have been something that would have gone along with the idea of bipedalism because of the way that it connects into the back of the skull. So I should say at the base of the skull, as opposed to the back of the skull, where you would see with most gigantic apes. So with the big silverback gorilla, you'll notice that the spine comes in at the back of the head as opposed to the bottom of the skull. Why? Because they're mostly in a like a bent over, hunched over, walking on back legs with their front arms on the ground. Whereas normal humans, they're going to have that skull or they're going to have the spine enter at the base of the skull as opposed to the back of the skull. For more information about Dr. Krantz, you can read his book, Bigfoot Sasquatch Evidence. Another big name in foot analysis is Dr. Jeff Meldrum. He's a professor of anatomy and anthropology at Idaho State University. He has become one of the leading researchers in when it comes to Bigfoot. Like Krantz before him, Meldrum focuses on the prints of the creature and suggests that the evidence supports the idea that a large bipedal primate exists in North America. The most notable features of the prints are what he refers to as a pressure ridge. Dr. Meldrum explains that the pressure ridge is the result of what he calls a mid-tarsal break. The mid-tarsal break is a flexible joint in the foot, and that the ridge forms as the result of a strong heel strike. And as the foot rolls forward on the ground, the flexibility, because the foot will flex in that mid point, and it will pressure, push, roll off of the ball of the foot. And this is what usually causes that pressure ridge. I know in some original studies, people had thought that that pressure ridge wasn't really a factor because some people had believed it was, it was a footprint that something had stepped on a stick and that's why it showed up. So Dr. Meldrum was one of the first to be able to identify the fact that that was not. He also uses what's referred to as dermatoglyphics, the study of patterns of skin ridges, to distinguish authentic prints from hoaxes. Another gentleman by the name of Jimmy Chilcutt, he's a former law enforcement agent. He was a fingerprint specialist. He uses his skills to identify unique characteristics and patterns not normally seen in animal tracks. Both gentlemen agree that the appearance of the skin ridges in older casts bolsters the argument for the existence of Bigfoot. Primary reason being that the identification of skin ridges it's a recent discovery. It's something that wasn't originally seen or noticed. I shouldn't say it wasn't originally noticed when people started making these casts. It wasn't until later on that through lack of lighting, those types of things, those things started to stand out. Another factor that they use to identify or try to authenticate real from a hoax is what's referred to as a dynamic print. The majority of hoaxed prints are more or less carbon copies, each print showing the same exact characteristics as the one that came before it. So right foot for right foot, left foot for left foot are basically all the same. There is no change. So with the dynamic print, on the other hand, it shows movement of the foot. It shows how the pad of the foot can compress. And in some cases, it shows how the toes can grip into the ground. There's one particular cast that they have where the creature was seen walking up a hill. As it was walking up a hill, there was some mud. The toes kind of gripped into the mud, slid down a little bit, and created these grooves, and later on caught some solid ground, and the creature was able to push and continue on its way up the hill. None of these things were present in the prints that were made by Ray Wallace. But they are present in other trackways. One of the examples I'll give you is Jerry Crew. Another one is the Blue Mountain Prince. And this can be attributed to Paul Freeman. Another book I would recommend that you take a look at is called Bigfoot Prints, and this was done by Paul's son, Michael Freeman. It does have some pretty unique things with QR codes where you can scan, and it'll actually bring up some video and things like that. The other prints are Patty's prints. And yes, I said Patty's. Hint, hint. There will be a segment based upon that idea. The search for Bigfoot remains a controversial topic, but researchers like Krantz, Chilcutt, and Meldrum, with their scientific approach, have ensured that Bigfoot will continue to capture the imagination. Until next time, hopefully this leaves you in the right headspace. Hey, folks, quick correction to the segment on Bigfoot prints. When I spoke about Michael Freeman's book, I'd referred to it as Bigfoot Prints. It's actually Bigfoot Files. As you may know, I'm a stickler for accuracy, so that's why I'm making this correction. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for that, John. Listen, I actually had got to see some Bigfoot plaster casts when I went to the Warren's Seekers of the Supernatural Paracon in Connecticut like 2 years ago, and they were pretty massive, man. I also got to take a picture with the real Annabelle doll, which was really, really cool. She was very nice, by the way, if anybody was wondering. So, like I said, thank you so much. Listen, I just want to say, I don't thank my guys enough for helping me with my show. From my podcast friends like Trebles Garcia from the Paranoia Radio podcast, to Bill Van Vagel of the Land of the Creeps podcast, Eve S. Evans and Chris Whitehouse, but also the guys that make content for me for no money whatsoever, like John Wright, Edgegrave Dave, Steve Santarpia, and my co-host, the Natman. Thank you. And so have a great week, everybody. And I'll talk to you guys next time. Later.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Podcast. And thank you to all my guests and contributors that help make this show possible. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warpedrealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you would like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest in the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or WarpRealityPodcast.com. Have a great night, everyone, and don't forget to change your shorts.